Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie, the spookiest podcast in North America. That's right. Horror month is winding down on F This Movie. There's only about a week left in October, so we're going to jam a bunch of fucking shows in the last stretch. Joining me tonight, once again, via satellite, for the first time during Horror Movie Month, is Mr. Alex Lawson.
I, for one, am very glad that Horror Month is almost over. There's a reason I've been made, that I've made myself very scarce here. I'm just very, very afraid.
You're afraid
of everything.
Afraidy cat,
yes.
Yeah.
That being said, though, I've greatly enjoyed, the hard work that you and JB have been putting in.
Thank you.
I think that particularly the F This Movie Massacre podcast. God bless you guys. Jesus. I mean, I've known you for quite some time now. I've never heard you sound that fucking just strung out on monster and monster movies.
I put my life on the line for that show.
Because
I've been sick for about 2 weeks now following that show, and I have to attribute that to the 24 hours straight of watching horror movies in a movie theater.
Probably didn't help.
No. Once again, if you haven't done so already during this last week of October, we hope everybody will participate in the F This Movie, F Horror Movies Challenge.
Yes.
Today's October 25th. And so that leaves like six days left in
October.
That'd
be 6 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're at 92 horror movies entered in by listeners. And the goal was to get to 100 or more. So I think if we keep this pace up, I think we're going to make it.
Well, and everybody listening out there, don't rest on your laurels.
That's
and
right.
Say, well, they're at 92. I'm sure they'll get there without my help.
That's,
no,
it's like voting. You got to go out and vote.
It's exactly like voting.
Yeah. So yeah, go to fthismovie.blogspot.com and find the F This Movie, F Horror Movies Challenge post. And if you watch a horror movie during the next 6 days, write the name of the movie and type a 7-word review of the movie. There are 92 other examples for you to follow if you don't get the gist of what I'm saying. And like we do on every show, I'm going to read a couple.
Sweet.
From the most recent entries. Vincent Morreale says, Nightmare on Elm Street, the 2010 remake. Sorry, Jackie Earl Haley. But this blows.
I would have gone. I mean, that's really good. I probably would have gone with something like, spoiler alert, Connie Britton gets it in the eyes.
Oh,
that's probably too many words. I didn't count.
I haven't seen it yet, but
now
I know
there
what
you,
happens
well,
to
sorry.
Connie Britton.
Gets it in the eyes. Yeah.
Davia says, "Let me in." Which I don't know if you heard, we did a whole show on Let the Right One In and Let Me In. So here's one on Let Me In. Filmmakers loved lingering shots on bad CGI. And that is true, because there's a lot of bad CGI in that movie. Miguel,
go
ahead.
There were two that actually stood out to me from a bit earlier in the
contest. Okay.
Let me see here. Oh, Steve said of the recently released Case 39...
Yes.
Scariest part is Renee Zellweger's anteater face.
face.
It's not exactly like original territory to be making fun of Renee Zellweger's face at this point, but I have to say I have not heard anyone call her an anteater yet. So that's very good. Well done, Steve.
I can't believe someone saw Case 39.
Yeah, that's the really impressive part of that whole thing. And then this other one that I really liked, as far as like if the point of this contest is to get as much across as you can in 7 words,
yeah.
I believe we can. I believe we may have a winner right now. Gab said, G-A-B, said, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1956. Alien pod people are commies. You're next. See, in those 7 words, he's gotten a summary of the movie, or at least what it's about, alien pod people, part of the, ingrained subtext that they're commies.
Right.
And the most famous quote from the movie. That's That's just good economy of words. Well done, Gab, I would say.
What I like about the F this movie, F horror movies challenge, is that everybody sort of approaches it in a different way. Some people go sort of straightforward plot summary. Some people go review. Some people go for sort of weird left field haiku, which I like.
Yeah, very good. Keep it up, everybody.
Yeah, we'll read a couple more.
Yeah, go for it.
Miguel Sanchez, who has drawn some more F this movie art.
I saw that.
Scary movie inspired. So
yes,
thank you.
Very good.
Thank you to Miguel. Wrote Psycho, I Want My Mommy. Wait, maybe not. Wicked Weasel did a bunch right in a row. So I'm gonna read two because I like two of these. Wicked Weasel, the first one, Death Proof. Stuntman Mike fucks with the wrong women, which I love.
And
The Blob, who knew Jell-O could be so deadly?
Wicked Weasel, bringing it hard. Very good.
Ciancio 23 will be our last one. Identity, don't worry, it's all in your head.
And, man.
If you've seen Identity, there's more to that little seven-word haiku than if you haven't seen Identity, I guess.
Yes, yes, definitely. Yeah, that is a really good one, again, for as far as summing it all up. Yeah. So, yeah, keep it up, everyone.
And as always, you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie, or you can follow us on Twitter. What is it? Just at fthismovie? I have no idea how Twitter works.
Did you make it? I mean, it's just at fthismovie.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Find it.
Yeah, whatever. But let's move on to the important stuff before we get into our discussion of tonight's movie. Alex, have you seen anything scary lately?
I have, actually. I've seen a couple things. I was just flipping around the TV and actually on the Lifetime channel, of all things.
And stop right there.
I know. Just hear me out, though.
Okay.
I caught the last 30 minutes or so of Misery.
Oh, all right.
It makes a little more sense now, which I've seen before and I really liked. But it still held up this time. I haven't seen it in maybe a couple years, and we've talked about how sometimes you come back to things and they're not as good as you remember, things like that. But I really like it because the monster, as it were, is just a person who has just completely lost grip on reality.
Yeah.
And I think it carries a lot more weight now, especially with the way sort of people allow themselves to get sort of sucked into pop culture, because Kathy Bates' character is someone who is just so, you know, intertwined with the works of this one author. I think that carries a lot of weight now with the way that, you know, sort of pop culture plays this even more integral role in our lives. And she's still scary as hell. I've never like rooted so hard for someone as when James Caan like takes the burnt, shreds of paper and jams them in her face. Like they do a really good job of just like making you be like, yes, just fucking give it to this woman. Like, because she's just terrorizing him. It's just nuts. So I saw Misery and I still liked it. I also recently rewatched, not exactly a classic horror movie, but I just rewatched Cloverfield.
Oh, okay.
Which I loved and loved again when I saw it this time. And I got to thinking about like the weird divergence between horror movies and monster movies, at least contemporarily, because I mean, like the original horror movies were monster movies, like the Universal monsters, which you and JB have talked about quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I feel like now any sort of monster movies that will get made will always have more sort of action beats than horror beats. And Cloverfield is like that, obviously. There's like intricately designed sequences, designed to be like very showy,
right?
Not so much of like building. I don't want to say building suspense because it does build some suspense, but you know what I mean. In terms of like how it's not exactly a horror movie per se, but that doesn't keep it from working.
I definitely think it's more of a horror movie, and I'm not sure what other monster movies you have in mind, but I mean, like, it's obviously. I think it's a lot more of a horror movie than, say, the Godzilla or King Kong remakes.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Is that what you're considering when you say like monster movie? I don't know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, maybe. Giant monster attacking a city movie.
Right.
And I'm someone, I mean, I did not love the King Kong remake, and not many people did. I did not love the Godzilla remake.
Oh, right. No.
Right. And I did really like the King Kong remake. I think I might actually like Cloverfield like better than either of them.
Okay.
Because every time I watch Cloverfield, this happens literally every time, I get so sucked into those first like 20 minutes before anything even happens, because the characters are so well developed through just like bits and like, just pieces of sort of mingling at this party, and then, you know, the other set of footage that's sort of interspersed. And it's not like they're terribly deep or complex, but I care about what happens to them because they're just friends who are hanging out, and it's very relatable. And then it's just such an interesting small way to tell this big story. It never really fails to impress me. I really, really dig it.
I will agree with a lot of what you said, and not to negate your opinion, but I will disagree when you say the characters are well developed, because to me they're just sort of shallow clothes hangers, which is okay to the extent that, like you said, they're just supposed to be anyone, and we're just kind of following literally anyone through this experience, and so I don't have a problem with that. But I, unlike you, when I rewatch the movie, I find the first 15 or 20 minutes a chore to sit through because I'm waiting for the monster to show up.
Oh, man.
I don't find myself caring about any of those characters. And I would argue that I don't know how much I'm supposed to. If I am supposed to, then I think the movie fails. But I think it's possible that the movie isn't interested in me caring about those characters as much as following those characters. And I think that's okay.
That's really interesting. I mean, I guess we're just at a difference of opinion then. And I think I'm just going to hang up the phone.
Okay.
All right.
Now,
right.
Are you on the phone? Because that means, you're doing this wrong.
I'm going to hang up the internet.
The internet hung up on me.
Weird.
But I'm glad you bring up Cloverfield.
Yep.
Because actually that is a good segue into what we're talking about tonight. Because when Cloverfield came out, I said, wow, that is very fucking clever, because here is a movie that has combined the aesthetic of the Blair Witch Project with sort of the plot of Godzilla. And tonight, of course, we are talking about the Blair Witch Project from 1999. And I remember thinking, like, wow, that's very clever to sort of take that handheld first-person approach and apply it to this great big movie. And I think for the most part it worked. I don't know that I'm as big a fan of Cloverfield as you seem to be, but I do enjoy that movie. And certainly the first time I saw it, it was a lot of fun to see it in the theater.
Sure.
It was definitely sort of a, you know, I don't like when people call movies a ride, but that's kind of how it felt, you know.
It really did.
Yeah,
yes.
And it hasn't held up as well on subsequent viewings for me. But then again, either has the Blair Witch Project. So now is as good a time as any to get into the Blair Witch Project.
All right.
Now, your thoughts on revisiting the Blair Witch Project 11 years after its release, sir?
My thoughts are, the first thing I thought of is that it has become so hard to watch the movie and not think about the like sort of circus atmosphere in which it was released.
Absolutely.
Because to think about that, and then subsequently how much it was sort of lampooned and parodied and sort of made fun of, to such a degree that it's just it becomes very difficult to like watch it unfold as a story,
right?
Because and actually I want to, you have, you know, a encyclopedic knowledge of films and particularly horror films, and I think, I mean, is this, did the Blair Witch Project like invent a genre in terms of like the found film or the found footage genre.
I hesitate to say that it invented the genre, because no doubt someone is listening who's like, no, probably, there's this fucking obscure movie from 5 years earlier that did it, and Blair Witch ripped that off, and how can you not know that? But as far as I know, it was the first sort of its kind, and certainly if it didn't invent it, it was the first one to gain sort of mainstream credibility, or, you know, it was the first one that anybody knew about. So you could say, you know, some guy in his basement invented it, but Blair Witch is the one that's going to get the credit.
Yes, definitely. To further answer your question, as a movie and as a story that unfolds over the 90 minutes or however long it is, it doesn't take long to knock out. There are a lot of problems with the movie. There's a lot about it that doesn't work. There's a lot of it that parts of it that are supposed to be sort of suspenseful ultimately just are very sort of shouty and confusing and not as scary as they're intended to be.
Right.
And this time when I watched it, I found myself just sort of, like passively indifferent to the action that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
With all that being said, I mean, you cannot oversell the cultural touchstone that this was, I think, because it is the perfect story to tell at the perfect time, because it came out in 99 and people were just still sort of figuring out the internet, the mainstream people anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of many. I don't know where you were. You're a bit older than I was, and perhaps than I am, and perhaps when you saw it, you had it pegged a little more than I did. I was only, 14 years old when this came out, and I mean, I thought it was completely real. I thought these people had gotten lost, and I found the thing, and like the whole marketing machine that was this movie. I mean, just like it. It was designed for me, and I bought right into it.
Well, the first time you saw the movie, you thought it was real?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I saw that poster, and I saw those weird cryptic trailers, and I, you know, went on my old fucking Compaq, you know, Presario, whatever the fuck it was, and, like, logged onto the website and was like, oh, my God, these kids are fucking dead. Where did they go? They vanished into thin air. And then I watched it, and I'm like, what the fuck? And then, again, like I said, the things that ensue, you find out, well, it's not really real, and then you have to ask yourself, well, even if it's not real, does that mean it doesn't succeed? And maybe it doesn't. But with all that being said, it's just so hard to just sort of write it off as this weird, you know, sort of stupid movie that doesn't really have a lot actually happening in it, and just say it like reinvented movie marketing, to put it all very succinctly, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I had the same feeling watching it, was that it was very hard to sort of divorce the movie from its cultural impact, and it's like critic proof at this point. Whether I like it or not doesn't matter, because
I agree.
It made its mark, and you know, I knew going into it when I saw it in 99 that it was fake.
Oh, okay.
And part of that is because I wasn't really on the internet. Like in 99, I didn't get on till later. And so a lot of the marketing went past me. I was unaware of the marketing. I knew about the movie from reading like different magazines like Movie Line and Premiere. And they talked about it, you know, playing festivals or whatever. And it was always in the context of it's sort of this fake documentary and look at what these guys cleverly did. Going into it, I knew that it was fake, but I don't think that, It certainly didn't lessen my enjoyment of the movie, I don't think, because it's very clever in the way that it tells this story, because like you said, it was sort of the first movie to do this. And I liked the movie in 1999 when I saw it, and it was a very divisive movie then, and I think it still is. I think its reputation has even lessened over time, because it was such a phenomenon. And now I think a lot of people who maybe even liked it 10 years ago now look at it and say, well, why were we making such a big fucking deal out of this movie? And yeah, you can certainly make a case for that, because honestly, I haven't felt compelled to watch it in the decade since I saw it. And had I not watched it for the purpose of this podcast, I don't know when I would have seen it again. Because even though I liked the movie, it's not one that I am all that interested in revisiting.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much of its impact is taken away after the first viewing. And the first viewing is special and neat, and you're seeing something new, and you're seeing something told in a different way. But then once that's over and you sort of take the gimmick away, there's not a lot left to hang on to.
Now, see, here's why it's rewatchable for me. I've actually watched it, like, probably three or four times since I saw it in the theater.
Okay.
And what's this is a weird, like, reason to watch a movie, and I totally admit that before I say it out loud. But I actually watch it to see if I can spot anything phony, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Because again, like, I have it in my mind that it was originally intended to catch people by surprise and say, here's this footage that we found of these kids, and they're just gone. They're not actors, you know, it's just this, you know, thing. And I mean, if it's, you know, I think it perpetuates that, you know, atmosphere really well. Because when these three kids just, like, start to, like, lose it and, like, devolve into craziness,
yeah.
I don't feel like anyone is ever acting. I still feel that way. I mean, you read all sorts of different things about, like, the tactics in which they, you know, the tactics that they took to,
right,
to film it, that they were, like, sort of telling different people different things and telling them to sort of improvise and, like, maybe not feeding them enough and
right,
you can sort of see it in their eyes. And that's why I keep going back to it, because maybe there's part of this, like, naivete in me that's, like, still not wanting to think it's real. I know these people aren't, like, dead in the woods somewhere, but, like, I don't know, just, like, wanting to sort of figure out how they pulled that off.
Mm-hmm.
It just from an aesthetic point. I mean, I know the actors did most of the camera work, obviously out of necessity. And it's just the one of the things that works is consistently viewing to viewing is the steady descent into madness that they all have, because mm-hmm. there's no contemporary horror movie beats in it where, like, there's one moment where someone just goes crazy.
Right.
It starts out as, like, little things. There's, like, tension in their conversations, and they're sort of second guessing each other about where they're going. And then before you know it, and again, it's not like there's, like, a long running time here or anything, before you know it, they're, like, they're just screaming at each other and, like, accusing people of trying to sabotage the thing. And I'm just, it's just a fascinating, like, sort of small scale tale of people going crazy in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't sound like something that makes a movie. But somehow it's always good enough to keep me coming back for at least, like, one viewing every, like, 2 years or so.
Yeah.
And wasn't the same for you, clearly. But I mean, I think that the goals that it doesn't set very lofty goals. It just wants you to show these, you know, these kids getting lost in the woods and sort of going crazy. And I think it does it in a way that just sort of cuts to the core of me, like, every time. So I
agree with you that the sort of descent of the characters is what is interesting about the movie, and where the movie works, I think, is in the way it creates that sense of disorientation and that feeling of hopelessness and we're lost and we cannot find our way out, because that affects me. Where I think the movie always got maybe a little too much credit, and conversely where it gets a lot of shit, is in this idea that, you know, it manages to be scary without gore, or it scares, you know, it's an exercise in minimalism, and it doesn't show you much, and that's what's scary. And I disagree with that, because I think where the movie...
So do I, yeah.
First of all, like, I just take issue with, like, it manages to be scary without gore, because I think that's a backhanded comment on movies that include gore, like, oh, movies don't need gore. And yeah, I guess they don't. It's just a particular tool that certain horror filmmakers use. And,
yeah.
And horror filmmakers, you know, horror movies are supposed to be scary, but I would argue that gore is never intended to be scary. You know, maybe it's a way of sort of speaking to our fears about death or the frailty of our own bodies. But I don't think gore as a tool is ever meant to be scary. Maybe it's part of a horror movie that is supposed to be scary, but gore itself, whatever, fuck that. So when the movie,
oh,
does,
come on, you were really on a roll there with the gore stuff.
When the movie tries to be sort of scary, whether it's, you know, leaving piles of rocks or sticks tied together, you know, I think the movie got a lot of credit back in the late 90s for doing those kinds of things. And isn't that, I mean, it's so scary and it's just sticks tied together, you know, and a lot of, like I said, conversely, a lot of people give it shit. Like, what's so scary about sticks tied together? And obviously the reality is somewhere in between because...
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously they're going for something and they're not showing you a lot, and that's to be commended. But yeah, watching it again last night, it's like, yeah, there's nothing scary about a pile of rocks or sticks tied together. So those things don't work for me, where the movie sort of tries to be scary. But like you said, the stuff with them getting lost and feeling hopeless and getting desperate, all that stuff works.
It does, yeah.
And I'm jumping ahead, but the one moment... that the movie tries to be scary and I think hits a home run is in the last shot. And I would argue that without that last shot, I don't even know if I would have liked the Blair Witch Project. I don't know that I would still be talking about it. I don't. For me, that last shot is what makes the movie. And I won't say what it is in case people haven't seen the Blair Witch Project. But if you
we can definitely talk around that without spoiling it. Yeah.
But if you're seeing the movie for the first time, make sure you pay close attention throughout the movie so that you understand what happens. Because I remember when I saw it, people being confused, like, "Well, what the hell was that? Well, were you listening?" Because it's very clearly foreshadowed and laid out.
It is, and that's actually another thing I gave it credit for, because when, and maybe that's even a tip off if. When I was younger, I didn't get it. But like now that I've gotten older and I've seen a lot more movies, now I understand like how stories are told a little bit. I mean, that's a tip off that it's not real, because I mean, that's a very clear example of like foreshadowing and then having it edited to, you know what I mean? Like I get that now, but I didn't get that then. But I mean, that's not something I was expecting from that movie, to have things like intimated in the first act come back. I wasn't expecting like masterful storytelling here when I saw it, because I thought it was just going to be this crazy raw footage. But again, I was sort of duped, you know, when I was a kid. But like, I mean, the goal of the movie at that point was to dupe me. So I gave it a lot of credit.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree about that last shot, because a movie like this, I mean, You really kind of have to nail the ending if you're going to do all this weird sort of outside the box stuff, and it has to crescendo to something. And yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, it really sort of delivers, and it's very like a lot of the movie, it's very minimal.
Right.
It's really sort of close to the vest, and you have to have sort of been paying attention, but man, pretty haunting stuff, and very, very affecting.
That's an example of, you know, simplicity paying off. I don't think that the sort of simplicity works all throughout the movie, like I said about the rocks and the sticks and all that. But I think in that case, it really works. Watching it again last night, I mean, there's one major reason why, like, A, you probably should have known it was fake in 99, and something that never jumped out at me for some reason, but then did last night, is like, if the conceit of the movie, and maybe I'm wrong, is the conceit of the movie that this, they found footage and here it is.
Yeah.
Because it's edited together.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And again, that's what I was saying before.
Like more than one camera.
Yes. Yeah.
So either the Blair Witch has an Avid, you know, I didn't know if maybe the conceit was, we found this footage and we edited it into a movie to show you. I don't know who the we is. You know, the royal we, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could be either of those, but I always, like, the wide-eyed teenager in me thought it was like, we are showing this to you now. Right, but yeah, like any reasonable person can now say, like, oh, well, there's, like, you know, shots being constructed here right. for us, kind of. And again, more than one camera. So you're having to discern what is being shown. That's like the nature of what the thing is. So if that's the mission, then it's not exactly successful. But again, I mean, like, I guess I was like the perfect audience at the perfect time when this movie came out. And so I'll always sort of hold it in high regard for that reason. But I definitely agree with what you were saying before, like the scary stuff with the bundles of sticks and the weird goo all over the guy's bag. I mean, that's not terribly affecting to me. I am still sort of, I do still sort of get this weird feeling about about the stick men in the trees. I know I'm sure that's probably a big eye rolling moment for you, but I think it's a really good like motif,
mm-hmm.
And just a really creepy aesthetic that I think just kind of works. But perhaps you disagree. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think in another movie or even possibly in this movie, it would be an eye-rolling moment. I didn't find myself rolling my eyes only because I don't feel compelled to be cynical about this movie. And maybe that's because, A, in 99, it did work for me and I liked it. Or B, like I said, it's critic-proof. And whether or not I like it, it doesn't matter at this point because it has its place in pop culture history and it had it had an impact. And it did its job. And so if I don't think stick men are scary, it doesn't fucking matter. But it's interesting because it really was, and possibly still is, but certainly more so when it came out, such a divisive movie.
Yeah.
And even though it was a huge success and it made like over $100 million and it was one of the most successful, like low budget movies ever made.
One of the most profitable. Yeah.
Right. That's what I mean. You know, there was a ton of people just shitting all over it. And I remember Mike, who does the show all the time, the time, but has done the show
twice.
Yeah, we had talked about it. We've talked about it before, and he was in film school when the Blair Witch Project came out, and he said it was very, very popular to shit all over that movie. And we would sort of discuss, well, why do you think that is? And I think it's, you know, for two pretty obvious reasons. One, because they're film students and they like to shit on things that are popular or successful.
Yeah, definitely.
But B, I think the underlying subtext of it is I didn't think of it first.
Without a doubt. And especially when it's such a simple idea that was probably just sitting right in front of anyone's face, really. Oh, yeah. Really? Some kids go into the woods and right. They can't find their way out and something attacks them? Weird.
But it just it wouldn't have occurred to anyone that something like that.
No, of course not.
Could play on, you know, on screens all across the country and make over $100 million. Even if somebody had the idea, you know, they wouldn't have necessarily known how to get it saturated as well as it was.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember back when it came out, Chris Rock actually had a really funny joke about it. Like the movie was purported to have been made for like, I don't know, $20,000 or something. And he had a joke about like, where the hell did that other $19,000 go? Like, I mean, because it's just that economical.
Right,
like,
right.
About like, well, someone's walking around with $19,000 in their pocket because I don't understand. That's like, that sounds like too much. Yeah. But yeah, you're probably right about that in terms of like the backlash, if you will. But I never really joined that party. This is something you and Doug have actually talked about, like sort of the thing you were touching on with the in the Goonies podcast. Not that I consider this a treasure of my childhood like the Goonies was for people. But I did, when I was younger, I did used to go on a lot of camping trips with my friends at like over, you know, weekends in the summer or in the fall. And to some degree, and this is probably true for any horror movie ever, so I guess I won't get too carried away with it. The extent to which this works is sort of dependent upon how much you sort of allow yourself to get like sucked into it, you know?
Yeah.
Because when I saw it for the first time, I just could not help but like place myself in that situation because I went camping all the time. Now that's sort of Now, movies shouldn't work like that, obviously. I mean, they should work like you should be able to walk in and enjoy it if it's a well-made movie, just no matter what your experience was. So maybe it's sort of limited in that sense. But again, that's what I took to it. And that's part of the reason why it'll always sort of stick out to me.
Well, and that's a good jumping off point for something else I wanted to bring up, possibly a little earlier than I planned, but that's such a good segue. How can I ignore it? The Blair Witch Project came out in 99 and was a huge fucking sensation. Like you said, it was parodied all over pop culture and it was a big hit and everybody talked about it, and whether or not it was good almost didn't matter because it was just this piece of history right when it came out.
Yeah.
However, unlike a lot of other very successful movies, particularly ones that are low budget, it has seldom been imitated.
Yeah.
Only a handful of movies have come out, and again, maybe a bunch have come out and they've gone straight to video or whatever, but only a handful really have come out in the wake of the Blair Witch Project that have sort of used that same handheld first-person aesthetic. Cloverfield is one that we talked about. There's a Spanish horror film called REC.
Wreck, I call it. Yes, which was then remade into Quarantine, right?
And I've not seen Quarantine, but I have seen REC.
Yeah,
and,
so have I.
And that's probably the best of the bunch, I think.
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to whatever extent you want to, not to say, I mean, because it's George Romero, so you sort of give it. But like, Diary of the Dead is got some. But I mean, it is a thing. I mean, it is that aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, That's got a lot of problems, but that is one of them.
Yeah, no, you're right. I forgot about that, and perhaps that's telling of my feelings of Diary of the Dead.
Yeah.
But the other movie, of course, that sort of borrows this same aesthetic and was probably the most successful in the wake of Blair Witch is 2009's Paranormal Activity.
Yep.
I rewatched Paranormal Activity, and you saw it for the first time in preparation
I did.
For this podcast. But what you had said about the ability to identify and the camping, that made me think of Paranormal Activity because I was comparing the two in my head, and I prefer of the two films, I prefer Paranormal Activity because rewatching Blair Witch, it really had no impact on me. Whereas rewatching Paranormal Activity, a lot of the stuff in that movie still worked for me.
Oh yeah,
and I don't know if it's a matter of, and here's where I was talking about it's a segue and it's a jumping off point. I have never been camping, nor do I ever intend to go camping. And so I don't know to what extent I can identify with some of what happens in the Blair Witch Project. Whereas Paranormal Activity, it's very much about something coming into your home.
Mm-hmm.
It's your space. You didn't do anything to bring this on. You're just sleeping in your bed and something's coming after you. Blair Witch Project, you know, you have to go out looking for this shit. And I'm the kind of guy who's not going to go out looking for shit.
Who would not?
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah.
However, I mean, to Blair Witch's credit, it still does a good job of creating that sense of hopelessness and desperation so that even if you haven't been camping or gotten lost or whatever, you still can identify with that feeling of, wow, that would suck. You know, like I empathize with what they're going through and it sucks.
But it's not readily identifiable, you're saying,
not,
I guess.
Not,
like
not
with
to me.
To you, yeah.
Right.
I mean, there's very little I could do to sort of rebut that, I think. I still prefer Blair Witch. And it's not just because of the identifiable things. I had some problems with Paranormal Activity.
Oh,
the
movie has a lot of problems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, specifically, and again, this is not a case of, because now I am 25 years old and I'm not stupid and I didn't think it was real when I started watching it. So maybe that has something to do with it, too.
Sure.
But I mean, whereas the performances in the Blair Witch Project still amaze me in terms of their intensity and just sort of the way that all of them just really put it out there, to speak in sweeping acting cliches. The acting of the two leads in Paranormal Activity is like distractingly bad for me.
Yes.
And it takes me completely out of it. It's like, from a technical standpoint, there's a lot about Paranormal Activity that works. Obviously the effects are minimal. The sound is great. Just the mixing and the editing is fantastic for what it has to achieve. All of that works. But the characters are so unlikable, and I don't actually, and in particularly in horror movies, I don't think characters have to be likable.
Right.
Because I think that's a little overrated, but I like hated these people. Like I did not.
Right.
I loathed them, where that wasn't the case for Blair Witch. That's where the line was for me. I still like Paranormal Activity a lot, and yeah. I'm glad I saw it. That's why I prefer the other rather Blair Witch.
Right.
But your point is very well made about the nature of the beast, if you will. You know, I mean, it comes to get you. You don't right. intrude on its territory or whatever. It's just sort of like, why do you think it took so long for one to be such a massive hit? Because I mean, Cloverfield was a hit. Do you think like people just sort of needed time before they could deal with another movie like that again, or what?
Maybe. I mean, I think unfortunately there's a stigma against this kind of movie also, in that, you know, if people are paying whatever they're paying for movie admissions now, they don't necessarily want to go see something that looks like a home video that they could shoot themselves.
You're right.
A lot of people don't like that handheld sort of shaky aesthetic. You know, a lot of people complain that it makes them sick. And if that's the case, you're going to have a hard time sitting through that. So people tend to like stuff with, you know, a budget and actors and production design and carefully constructed shots. When I went to see Paranormal Activity, it was it was like 9 or 10 months after my wife and I had our son, and we had gotten a babysitter, and we were going to go out to a movie. And I sat down for Paranormal Activity, not wanting to see it, because for those very reasons, I was like, "Well, listen, we're out at the movies. We actually have a babysitter. I would like to see something with a story and a budget and actors." And
sure.
I was sort of resentful of the movie as it started, but it wore me down pretty quickly, and I ended up liking it more than I anticipated that I would. Your point about them being unlikable is very true. I would argue that with the guy in Paranormal Activity, that's okay. Although I can never forgive the movie or even overlook the fact that his name is Mika.
When it's spelled Micah?
Well, right. But just even, I mean, and I know that's his name in real life, and so they use the real name, and Blair Witch did that same thing where it's like it's easier if you're having these people improvise scenes. Or if you want to create a mythology that this really happened, it's easier to use people's real names. But I would have cast anyone other than someone named Mika. I would argue that Katie, played by Katie Featherston.
Featherston, yeah.
Should be more sympathetic than she is. And she's not.
She's not, yeah. No. Like, and a person like that that's having horrific shit happen to them, I found myself asking, like, why don't I care? I should.
Right.
But I don't. And they're both really sort of just like he's doing a lot of that like macho boyfriend stuff, and he wants to protect her, but that doesn't really play for me. It's just it ultimately comes off just really douchey, and maybe he is a douche. I don't know.
He's a huge douche, and I think that's by design. I mean, I think he's kind of supposed to be a douche, but where Paranormal Activity, I think, has a huge problem, Blair Witch cleverly sidesteps. And the issue with Paranormal Activity is all of this stuff is going on. Your first question is, why don't you just get out of the house?
Yes.
And now they try and deal with that on some level. They have Katie say, well, it would just follows me anywhere. And even more so, they have Mika, again, like you said, be this male macho douche. And his whole attitude is, no, this is my fucking house. I'm not leaving. I'm going to beat this thing.
Yeah.
And that maybe works to a point. But, you know, when your girlfriend is being dragged out of the bed by an invisible force, like, at that point, you stop, you swallow your fucking pride, and you check into a hotel.
Yeah, deal with that, yeah.
So I have a hard time getting past that fact. And Blair Witch, very, like I said, sort of sidesteps that by not making that an option.
No, you can't. I mean, they're trying so desperately to leave, and they can't.
Right.
And actually, I mean, that stuff, that's why I think it's so cleverly crescendos where they found that they've walked in a huge circle.
Right.
That's not really a spoiler for Blair Witch, but I mean,
the characters walk in a circle.
Blah, blah. They come back to the same point, and I mean, at that time, we've seen them get attacked, harassed or whatever. They've heard weird shit in the woods, like two or three times at that point. And the point of it has been for them to get out, and they don't know where they're going. And that's why that really hits me in such a way. It's like, oh, not only are they not getting out, they are right back where they were. And there's something really sort of lonely and empty about that that hit me the first time, and it still hit me this time. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I was like outright scared, because I'm 25 years old. I'm safe in my apartment in Virginia. I'm not going to be attacked by anything. That is an emotional thing that really struck home with me. The way they react to it just really gets me. And again, so yeah, I guess that notion of escape is something, or the lack of an escape, mm-hmm. is something that Blair Witch does very well. This I should have said this before, because now we've sort of moved on. But the psychic guy in Paranormal Activity,
yeah.
he's really troublesome for me. He's only in like two scenes, yeah. But he's like I just don't buy it at all. And like, I know it's fake, but I mean, all movies that aren't documentaries are fake, but I still deal with it. The guy, is just, especially when he comes back in that second time and he's doing the old, oh, it doesn't like that I'm here. And well, there's nothing you can do. And leaving, you know, actually that, I mean, that's why they haven't come back. Cause he has to be the one to say leaving won't help you. He
right.
says that.
Right.
Which again is sort of a cheat in my mind. Cause again, yeah, just get out of the fucking house. I mean, take right. your chances. At the very least, it's going to be the same thing. Just leave. Yeah, I mean, that's why I probably now all that being said, I really do want to see the sequel. I'm intrigued enough to see how they can sort of push the envelope of this kind of storytelling, because I think this is creative. And I guess I shouldn't say it's creative since they've been doing it since 1999. But I mean, if not creative, then at least sort of it presents a challenge,
right.
I guess, to the filmmaker and then also right. to me to view it in a different way. So it has at least succeeded in like sating my appetite for more, you know?
Right. Blair Witch, you know, obviously gets points for sort of being the first, and because Paranormal Activity, I don't think would exist without it. And
no.
Blair Witch, you know, in terms of like A to B to C story movie, I think works better for a lot of the reasons that you're saying, that there's sort of character arcs and, things happen, it progress in a way that makes more sense. And, you know, Paranormal Activity, like I said, it ends up working for me better, even though it just sort of lives and dies by its scares. You know, Blair Witch works better maybe overall, but it doesn't have the peaks that Paranormal Activity has for me. And rewatching it again last night, it's really only in those moments where, I mean, you can almost tune out of the movie during anything that happens during the daytime. I found myself doing that. I was kind of working and doing other things as it was going. But every time it gets to that static shot of them in the bed, you have to stop and pay attention, because it's like, what's it going to be this time? And I found myself getting nervous, again, having seen the movie. But I was readying myself for, oh, shit, what's it going to be? What's it going to be? And it still worked on me and freaked me out. But watching it, I was like, wow, this thing is actually – in a lot of ways kind of structured like a porn film, because it's just
in that you're just waiting and waiting for the stuff to happen.
Exactly. It's like there's long stretches of bad acting and trite shitty dialogue that you could almost fast forward through to get to the part that you're waiting for, and then that happens, and then you got to fast forward through some more of it and wait for the next one. But again, I like those moments enough that to me that's a movie that I would go back to, I think, more than Blair Witch Project.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. No. You know. No. Yeah. You're probably right about that. But I like the way you structured that the peaks are better, because yeah, some of those sequences when the and again I had just watched it for the first time, so I was very intently sort of hanging on every, like, I was like looking really hard into the darkness,
right,
you know,
right.
of the, like, that's great. And like in that, like, if that's what the movie is trying to have you do, which I presume is the goal, it succeeds admirably, because I was always sort of looking for, you know, little things and shadows and things that are moving. And it like succeeds in making lights turning on and off scary,
right,
which
right.
is like just really pretty simple and astounding. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff elsewise is pretty passable. I'm actually now. Have you seen the trailers for the second one?
I have not seen one thing about the second one. I know nothing about it.
You should check out it's on YouTube and, well, anywhere, I guess. And I don't know.
Tell me more about this YouTube.
YouTube is a place where people go to see the things that you can see anywhere, but you can see them whenever you want. Is the case.
Let's say I wanted to see like a cat playing piano. Where would I go?
Oh, boy, are you in luck, because YouTube has the market cornered. People getting hit in the face or testicles with athletic pieces of athletic equipment, all that good stuff.
I like that.
Also, you can see the Paranormal Activity 2 trailer, and people who have seen it will know what I'm talking about. And the only reason I even bring up trailers for movies that just came out this past weekend, is just because you and JB have talked on more than one occasion about rules for horror movies, and that one of the rules, or maybe perhaps the only rule, for you two, is that you can't mess with kids.
You can put kids in jeopardy.
Oh, okay.
But you can't hurt them.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, and again, I haven't seen the actual movie, so I don't know what happens, but the kids are being put in really serious jeopardy.
Oh, really?
In this, from the looks of this trailer, that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
But again, I am incredibly intrigued. And again, I mean, if I'm just going to sort of buy into this new, like, franchise, if they're going to churn these out, which I don't know if they'll, I mean, we're on two. I don't want to sound like it's like going to be like a dynasty or something, but like, yeah, I mean, I'm sort of on board. Yeah.
I do feel like it's the kind of, again, I haven't seen the sequel, so I can't say what its approach will be, but, I feel like it's the kind of thing that would probably wear out its welcome fairly quickly, because how many times can you show a movie, you know, with doors slamming and lights turning on, and maybe you could do it a bunch of times, you know? Maybe there's a bunch
maybe
of
you
ways
could.
To...
I mean, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's just sort of different ways you can raise the stakes. I mean, I don't know if eventually you just have someone's house fucking fall down on them. Or
well, no, that would not be minimalist. And these movies are all about minimalism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting that we talk about the Paranormal Activity sequel, because we probably should mention the fact that, given the fact that Blair Witch made a shitload of money, the studio behind Blair Witch at the time was Artisan, which has since been absorbed by Lionsgate. But Artisan obviously couldn't turn down the potential to make a bunch more money. And so they greenlit a sequel to the Blair Witch Project. Called Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows, or possibly Book of Shadows Blair Witch 2.
I do believe it's Book of Shadows Blair Witch 2.
That's horrible.
Which right there, right? I mean, like, what are you, like, why are you rocking the boat on where the fucking numeral goes? Like, don't do that.
It came out just a year after the Blair Witch Project, and I will give it credit for taking a different approach, whereas the first movie is sort of this documentary verite style. The second movie goes for a sort of a narrative approach and is about the sort of reaction to the first Blair Witch Project. That it's, you know, this movie had come out and people saw it and were inspired by it to create a Blair Witch tour. And but man, is it. And I should also note that it's the sort of the narrative debut of a couple of documentary filmmakers, or just one, I guess, Joe Berlinger, who had made several great documentaries, Paradise Lost and Paradise Lost 2, after the debacle of Book of Shadows ruined sort of his narrative career. He made that great Metallica documentary called Some Kind of Monster, So this is his dipping his toe into the pond of narrative filmmaking, and it's a mess. It's a disaster. I don't know if there's anyone that likes Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2.
No, and I don't even really think it's something you ought to seek out, even if you haven't seen it. Even out of morbid curiosity, I think it's pretty passable. And not passable as in I give it a passing grade. Like you should fucking pass on it repeatedly.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, oh, yikes. But that's a lot of problems. And again, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, that is, if you're going to make a sequel to a movie like that, I mean, that might be the way to go in terms of a concept. But yeah, I mean, if there was ever an example of trying to cash in on something, that is it, and it just really does not work. And if anything, it just, for me, it hammers home how special the first one really is, because it's like, okay, it really was this thing that was the right thing at the right time, to, again, whether people liked it or hated it, they were certainly fucking talking about it, a lot. So, if the goal of it, you know, was to create conversation, mission accomplished. Also, if the goal was to create a really shitty sequel, mission double accomplished.
It's interesting because, you know, movies ultimately are obviously very subjective because they are, you know, it's sort of up to people's personal taste. But horror movies and comedies, I guess, more than any other genres, are particularly subjective because not only do they depend on sort of what you dig as a movie, but they also depend on what you find funny or what you find scary.
Yeah, your own sensibilities, yeah.
Right, and so even in the course of this conversation, you know, I'm saying, like, well, I prefer Paranormal Activity, and you're saying I prefer Blair Witch, and I don't think either of us really is wrong.
Yeah.
We would only be wrong, like, if one of us said, I prefer Saw 2.
Right. Or Blair Witch 2, for that matter.
Perhaps. So it's interesting because, you know, there are a lot of people that do not dig on Blair Witch that never have. And like I said, I think there's a lot of people who have sort of revised their opinions about it. And I don't know that I have revised my opinion about it because, I, like we've said over and over again, I think it's still special and it works for what it was, and like you said, it was the right movie at the right time, and my opinions on it now almost don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, it's one of those movies that has sort of, I don't want to say elevated itself, because that makes it sound like it's really fucking good, which it's not. I mean, it's got problems. But, I mean, it has elevated itself in the sense of, it's not, I mean, it will always be that cultural touchstone.
Right.
1999 was a historically great year for movies, and Blair Witch is just part of that. And again, not just because of the quality, but of what it meant to the industry, that you don't need a revolutionary idea or a ton of fucking money.
Right.
Not that, like, great movies hadn't been made before for very cheap, but, I mean, this is, like, nothing, you know. It's going to be hard for it to ever shake, to shake that, you know, sort of significance.
So Blair Witch Project, where does it rank for you in terms of your favorite horror movies?
I mean, it won't, like, achieve sort of the touchstone classic status, like, you know, again, like you said, like Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Dead or something like The Shining or Psycho. For sheer, you know, ingenuity and, like, relevance to me, we're talking about top 20, I guess.
Okay.
For me, and again, like you said, all very subjective,
right?
And at the very least, you know, taking numbers and rankings out of it, always something that I will come back to.
Will
show my kids before they go camping.
Don't let your kids go camping.
Yeah, no, I probably won't.
Kids don't need to be outdoors.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting because I suspect that this will be the last time I watch Blair Witch Project for a long time.
Well, again, it's been a hell of a run.
Not because I dislike the movie, but just because I'm never compelled to return to it. There's so many other lesser movies that I will watch a fucking Friday the 13th Part 7 before I will go back to the Blair Witch Project. And I know that one is better than the other, But for sheer watchability, I, for whatever reason, I'll watch Psychic Tina fuck up Jason Voorhees before I'll watch Heather Donahue whine in the woods. By the way, if you didn't know that the Blair Witch Project was fake, you probably could have figured it out when years later you saw Heather Donahue pop up on a Steak and Shake commercial.
Oh, no shit?
Her career never quite took off the way that we all thought it might when she was part of the, you know, one of the most profitable movies ever made.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, she's not exact. I mean, she doesn't exactly scream movie star to you. No. But yeah, you're right. Also, I think what's the guy's name? Mike. Mike. I don't know his last name. Mike. Heather Donahue, Josh Leonard, and then yeah. Mike. I don't remember his last name.
Yeah.
He was in that movie Men of Honor with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Robert De Niro about the first black scuba diver, I think, which came out very shortly after, which was actually I'm glad we got around to this. That was the first tip off for me. I read in a magazine.
You're like, holy shit, that guy's not fucking dead. He's scuba diving with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, yeah, I read in a magazine somewhere, and then everything I knew was a lie.
Joshua Leonard, actually, if you're interested, was in a movie last year called Hump Day with Mark Duplass, and who directed Cyrus, and he's on The League, and you'd probably know him if you saw him.
Well, goddamn, I'm glad they're all doing so well.
Yeah, and that movie's actually worth checking out. Again, if you have Netflix Instant, it was available on Netflix Instant. It's called Hump Day. It's about two guys who agree to do – they're both straight, and they sort of agree to do a gay sex scene with each other almost as like a dare, and then it's about will they or won't they back out of it.
Interesting.
It's good. It's worth checking out, and Joshua Leonard is good in it and very much alive, and – I think has all of his teeth.
I say, does he have all of his teeth?
Yeah,
is he covered in any sort of goo?
Well, that would be spoiling the end of Hump Day.
Thank you for knocking that one out of the park.
And on that note,
yes.
Thank you very much, Alex, for effing the Blair Witch Project. And,
thanks for having me.
As always, email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com and keep watching scary movies for the next 6 days. And we'll see you guys soon. Alex, please go stand in the corner.